Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to welcome back to the program Hank Spies for our monthly show on home maintenance. He's with us every month, always on a Monday. We start off the week taking your questions on anything, just about anything that goes into the single-family home. Maybe something's not as it should be. You need to fix something, need to make some changes. You're doing some remodeling, and you have questions about things like basements and foundations, doors and windows, siding, insulation, attics, gutters, roofs. I will not go on. You get the idea. Whatever is on your mind, if you want to call in, I know Hank will do his best to advise you. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, and that one's good anywhere that you're listening this morning. So if it would be a long-distance call, use that number, and we'll pay for the call, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you. It's always good to be here.
Very pleased to have you here. And we already have three people ready to go, so we'll start right in. First caller is in Homer, and it's line number one.
Yes, good morning.
Yes.
I do need your advice. Our home is 40 years old, something like that. And I need to replace the flooring in my lower level. It's a split level. This is concrete floors. We have vinyl tile down there, and they're popping off.
Mm-hmm.
They were glued down with some black glue sometime or other. And what would you recommend I put on this concrete lower level, not basement level? This is a four-level home, but this is, you know, below grade.
Probably in synthetic carpet.
A synthetic carpet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, is that a glue-down type thing?
No.
No, okay.
No. It might be stuck down with double-sided tape around the edges.
Okay. Now, that's synthetic carpet.
The reason I say synthetic is that if it ever gets wet, it's less likely to support mold growth,
mm-hmm.
and you can come in with a carpet back and pull water out of it more easily.
Okay.
You use a double-sided tape, so if you really have to, you can pick it up and put it back down later.
Okay.
And that will make the floor warmer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, well, my husband's always concerned about fire, and if fire, then the smoke, which is very black and toxic and so forth. Now, with the synthetic carpet, have those properties? Or?
Well, it will have some of those properties. However, if you have a fire that would burn a old carpet down there, you're going to be dead from smoke inhalation before you have to worry about it.
Okay. Well, I will trust my concrete walls and my concrete floor not to burn.
Right.
Okay, that helps me a lot. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, very good. Let's go to Champaign next, line number two. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. We have some problems with, I have a patio post with a metal roof on it, and the post, the whole thing is about 10, 15 years old, and the posts are developing major splits in the middle. And now, should I fill them with caulk, or what should I do with them?
Probably ignore it. Those are basically just drying splits. They're not affecting the structure. It all depends on how far you want to go for appearance.
Yeah. Well, they don't look bad. It's just the fact I was just afraid the water would get in there and make it worse and freeze.
Well, hopefully they are pressure-treated posts. I don't know that that's true, but they probably are. And vertical splits will drain pretty well anyway. If the split was horizontal so the water could get in and sit in there, that would be another question. But I would assume that these are drying splits and they're vertical and they drain out and dry out pretty rapidly.
Yeah, they're up and down, and they don't look all that bad. I just was afraid I could stop them from making a mess.
I'd live with them.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Right. Now, I know on pressure-treated wood, if you cut it on the end against the grain, then you're supposed to treat the ends.
That's right.
So I guess my question is, the pressure treatment on pressure-treated wood, just how far into the wood does it go?
Well, that depends on who does it, as much as anything else. Theoretically, it will go all the way to the middle. As a practical matter, not necessarily. I have found a lot of hollow columns that the outside was pressure-treated and survived nicely, and the inner part decayed. And I find this, well, as an example, in particular, people who use used railroad ties for landscaping, very often they become pipes because there's 2 or 3 inches in the middle that never got treated. But in general, it's pretty good. And as I say, these type of splits drain and dry pretty readily. It isn't as though we had a situation like we do with a log cabin, where a log will split lengthwise. Well, of course, it's horizontal, and water will go in there. And I've found quite a number of logs that have 3/8 of an inch on the outside, and the inside is compost. So, yes, if it's horizontal, then you better do something about it. It's vertical, so it dries. I don't really consider it a major problem.
All right. We'll go on here. Next in line is Lafayette. That's line 4. Hello.
Hello. How do I extend the life of steel gutters? Actually, they're old eaves troughs that are just beginning to show pinholes and smears of rust.
Well, the best thing you can do is to go up there, wire brush them out, and if you already got pinholes, probably you go in with an asphaltic coating on it. If you don't have pinholes already, go in with a fish oil-based paint, such as Rust-Oleum or something like that.
Mm-hmm. The asphalt treatment is what, roofing tar?
Well, it's more like the roof coating that you use on mobile homes.
Aluminum.
Oh, it contains aluminum.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, that's about, if you've already got pinholes, that's probably what you're going to need, and you look at it as a temporary fix.
Okay. Now, should some paint go over or under the tar?
Probably not. That should take care of it.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Let's go next to line number 3, and this is back in Champaign. Hello?
Yeah, hi. I got a new roof put on my house within the year, and when they put the roof on, they used nails that were rather long, so on the undersides of the eaves and the entryway, you can see like a 1/4 inch to 1/2 inch of the nail sticking through, and it also caused the paint around that to sort of chip, and so it really sort of stands out and, you know, aesthetically doesn't look good. I suppose the roof is still fine, but I'm just wondering, I spoke to the roofer about it, and he said that the nails have to penetrate all the way through, and I'm just sort of questioning that because it looks so bad. And I wanted to get your advice.
Well, okay, what is the sheathing? Is it plywood?
I'm not sure. I assume.
In other words, if he's correct if it's plywood, because we need that penetration to hold him.
Okay.
Whether the sticking through that far is necessary, it may be open to question. He might have been able to use a 1/4 inch shorter nail.
Right.
But probably the best solution is to cover the bottom of the overhang so that you don't see him. And you want to attach that covering with stainless steel nails so they do not rust.
Okay. So I can't really go back to him and say, this is, you know.
No.
You used a nail that was too long and now it looks ugly.
No, not really. Because, yes, you really do need full penetration if it's a plywood. Now, if it was solid wood, they probably could have used a short enough nail that the point didn't stick out.
Okay.
But plywood is not thick enough for that. See, solid wood is 3/4 of an inch. Plywood is anything from 3/8 to 1/2 inch.
Okay. Okay, well, thanks for the info.
Okay.
Right. Next on to Ivesdale, line 1. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking the call. Appreciate all the helpful information we get from the station as well as Mr. Spezer. Question I have is, we've used a fine grind landscape mulch. It's a hardwood mulch all around the foundation of the house. Can we sprinkle a trace amount of diazinon through that I normally use for grub control on the yard? in order to keep insects out as well as termites and so forth.
Well, I wasn't sure that you could still use diazinon, but if the label instructions say you can put it on lawn, I see no reason why it won't go on that.
Yeah, okay. Good enough, then.
Diazinon is pretty potent stuff.
Yeah,
you
I
have
understand
to
that.
Be very careful with it.
But we are getting it from the local retailers, retailers and so forth. So.
Right.
Yeah, okay, very
Should
good.
Be all right.
Thanks.
All right, well, other questions, comments are certainly welcome. Our guest this morning, Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's here every month, always on Monday. We start the week off with this opportunity for you to call and ask questions about problems around the house, things needs to be fixed, you need some advice, Hank will do his best to help you out. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Something I just thought it might be worth mentioning, and we talked about this before, even though we have within recent memory had some pretty heavy rains, it then has been pretty dry.
Right.
And if people are not watering foundation plantings around the house, and they probably are. But if they're not, it's probably worth thinking about that. As we've talked about what happens when the soil that's around the foundation gets so dry that it starts to pull away, mm-hmm. then you get stuff going down in that crack, and then when it swells up again, you can have
it will push
the walls in. Yeah.
And I don't know that we're bad enough yet this year to have a major problem with that, but it's well on its way. The most spectacular example of that was back in 1988, which was really the drought of the century. And we've got lots of calls from walls that had been pushed in because many times the soil shrunk away as much as an inch. Mm-hmm. And then assorted trash or another, as you garden, the dirt falls down the crack and so on. And then when the soil expands again, it will definitely push the wall in. We did quite a bit of work with the State Geologic Survey on this problem at the time. Now, that was a far more severe system in that it dried out so deep that some people had basements drop. The soil shrunk deep enough that actually one end of the basement, it was a loud bang and a crack appeared down the walls and across the floor, and the entire basement had dropped about a half an inch or so. Mm-hmm. So we do definitely want to keep the foundations plantings watered so that we avoid this. We don't have nearly the problem that they do in some areas. Texas and Colorado are particularly bad in this, and in those we oftentimes put in a subsurface irrigation system around the outside of the foundation. Here we put in tile to keep the basement dry. There we put in an irrigation system to keep the soil wet enough so that it does not collapse under the house. So everybody has a different set of problems depending on exactly what soil characteristics you have.
Right. Okay. So it's just something that maybe not so much of a problem yet, but something we're keeping in mind.
Keep an eye on it. If you start developing gaps next to the foundation, start doing some watering. We don't want to water enough so we get water in the basement or the crawl space or whatever, but we want to keep that soil damp. Yeah. And this is particularly important around where the downspouts come because usually that soil has been kept wet for years, and it will shrink more as it dries out.
Okay. Well, we got some other folks here lined up and ready to go, and we'll get back to the phones. And we'll start with with Champagne, line number one. Hello.
Hello. I was just curious if you had any comment on the new water heaters, where the tankless water heaters. Know what I'm referring to?
Yes, I do.
I'm just curious about, I just bought a new house and I was thinking about replacing the old water heater with one and was wondering about what comments you had on that.
Well, a lot depends on how you use the hot water. You have to realize that a tankless water heater is limited as to how many BTUs of energy it can put in. Mm-hmm. If you are using hot water in large quantities at one time, it's not going to be all the way hot. If you use it only occasionally, fine. I would not hook one up to a whirlpool tub or something like that because it isn't going to be warm enough coming out of there.
Right.
So for straight domestic use, yes, usually it works, particularly if you have the low-flow shower heads.
Okay.
But, they're a real disadvantage in the past, and this may be taken care of by now, was the fact that you never get parts for things.
Oh, okay.
Most of the things were made in Europe or the Orient, and there was a considerable part problem with them. But, yes, you can run continuously. It will put that given number of BTUs in continuously up to its capacity. And, you know, it goes back. We used to have oil-fired water heaters before we had natural gas so much. And you could literally turn on a hot water tap and let it run 24 hours a day because the smallest oil burner that we had was big enough to heat the stream of water continuously. Theoretically, that's what happens with these gas-fired ones. Electric-fired ones, there are some small electrics which are suitable for use with a lavatory or something like that. They should never be hooked to anything like a shower.
Okay. My second question, kind of related to that, is gas still substantially less expensive than electric? I mean, I've lived in apartments my whole life, and I've never had anything but electric, and the house we're buying is gas.
Well, this varies. As price of gas went up, it's still cheaper, but not there isn't as big a difference as there used to be.
Okay.
Because of the big jump in gas prices last year.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to now Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about some paint. We had our bathroom painted last month, white paint, semi-gloss, and since then there have been pink drips appearing on it, and they're not permanent. We wipe them off, they clean off, leave it a little bit glossier looking. I'm wondering what they are and what we should do next time to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Well, it's probably moisture condensation, and run your vent fan.
But the change in color?
The color could be leaching something out of the paint, but basically there wouldn't be anything there if there wasn't condensation.
Okay. Okay, so there's nothing to worry about in anything except for keeping the vent fan.
Right. Remember that the vent fan should run for 15 or 20 minutes after you've gotten out of the shower.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, then.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Other questions are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Just the kind of... Going back to the previous caller, before this one, this kind of water heat that we're talking about where it's essentially you're heating it on demand.
On demand, that's right.
Other than – now, I know that some people, for example, if they have a lavatory or a bathroom that's a long run from where the water heater is and they are unhappy because the hot water, by the time it gets there, it's not as hot as they would like it. That's one application for –
Yes, that would be an application for one, and for that you could even use an electric because there's a small tank there that holds maybe a quart, something like that, that will be up to temperature. And by the time you've used that, the hot water from your other water heater should be getting there. You hook this into a hot water line. Now, if we were really trying for the ultimate, we would hook it to a cold water line, but if it's just a lavatory, you can probably get by with that. If it's anything more than a lav, you'd put it in the hot water line just so that you could have some hot water there instantaneously and give the water from the water heater, the big water heater, a chance to get there. This can be done also in a couple of ways. We can put in a loop system so that water is flows either by gravity or with a pump from the main water heater and back to it again so that you only have about a foot of pipe right next to the faucet that is not containing hot water. And those can use quite a bit of energy. You have to insulate the pipes and so on. And the pumped ones, we recommend putting a timer on the pump so that it only runs during that time of day when you are likely to be using water at that distant faucet. In other words, you might set it to run from 6:30 to 8 in the morning, and likewise 8 to 10 at night or something like this, so that you would have instantaneous hot water. Because the pumps that circulated continuously can add significantly to your water heating bill. And water heating is second only to space heating as far as use of energy in the house.
Yeah. Well, would that be reason enough for people for their main hot water use, either for the kitchen or for the bathroom? Can you think about hot water on demand, provided that you don't have an enormous tub and you need to have that much hot water?
You could, though generally what we try and do is put the big tank-type water heater close to that point of use. We want it close to the laundry, kitchen, and main bath so that we don't have so much heat loss. The other thing that sometimes they're doing in some of the newer ones is to use a smaller pipe that goes to the distant ones. Use plastic pipe, not any of the metals, a quarter inch is being done. Now, this, again, will handle a faucet. It sure will not handle a shower. But you don't waste nearly as much water down the drain while you're waiting for the hot water to get there.
Yeah. Is there any point in insulating water supply lines?
It depends on what kind of water use you have. Remember that insulation only slows down the heat loss. If you use it now and are not going to use it again for another hour, it isn't going to make any difference. It's still going to get cold. Now, if you're going to use it again in 5 to 10 minutes, then yes, it will make a difference. So, again, it all depends on where this water line is going and what your water usage is there.
We're at about midpoint of the first hour here of Focus 580 with Hank Spies. It's our monthly show on home maintenance. And if you have questions, you can call us in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free anywhere you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Assumption on our toll-free line, number 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I've been learning that radon is a problem in our area, but I don't know how great a problem it is.
Well, do you have any idea what is testing? How many picocuries per liter are you getting?
About 5.
Well, I'll be very honest, and the EPA is going to disagree with him, but I would ignore it.
Just ignore it.
The number 4, which the EPA uses as the, quote, level of concern, unquote, was very honestly plucked out of midair. It has no scientific basis. We have every reason to believe it was determined that there would be enough houses in violation for that to justify the EPA's budget.
Okay. So what measure should be taken?
Well, as I say, at 5, I would ignore it. Anything under 10, I would ignore. As you go above that, if you go above 20, then definitely you ought to be doing something.
Okay, so health problems aren't really created by this.
The theory is that it will increase the chances of lung cancer, and it is, to a certain extent, acts more in combination with people that smoke. It may increase those. However, the numbers that they use were determined from uranium miners who get a couple of hundred times that level. And they contend that this is a straight line, and there is every reason to believe that it is not. There's been a number of studies done that show that on a county-by-county basis, counties that had an average level of 10 actually had less lung cancer than those that had an average level of 3.
Oh, my.
So there is considerable reason to doubt the validity of this number 4, which, as I say, was pretty arbitrarily plucked out of midair. This allowable number varies around the world. It runs in some countries as high as 20. Other places in Scandinavia, where apparently the stuff almost doesn't exist, it's 2. Outside, air, 0.5 about here.
Oh.
So, I mean, there's no place where there is none.
But as far as when you sell a house, that's
to the best of my knowledge at this point, the only people that seem to be concerned about it are the attorneys for relocation companies. In other words, if you are working for a company that if you are moved or transferred, they have to buy your house, then they are probably concerned.
But now in our area, is that a required inspection?
No.
Just a desired one.
It may be desired. It is certainly not required.
Okay.
And it's actually rather difficult to get a check anymore because in their infinite wisdom, the state of Illinois raised the licensing requirements and licensing fees so high that most of the people who were doing it don't.
I see. Well, it's a new area of something that has come up recently.
Well, actually, you see, it's been around since we lived in caves. There's nothing new about it. It's part of this thing that says if you can measure it, it must be bad.
But as far as getting rid of it or making it, reducing it, is there really much you can do?
Yes. There are a number of things you can do. One of them is ventilation. Of course, that increases your energy thing. Is your house on a basement or a crawl space?
It's got a basement. And a crawl space. It's half a basement and half a crawl.
Okay, do you have a sump pump in that basement?
No.
Okay, probably the best thing that you can do at this point is to tightly seal a sheet of plastic over the dirt in the crawl space.
Okay.
If that doesn't work, then you chisel a hole in the basement floor down into the gravel that is supposed to be under the concrete and put a small exhaust fan there that will pull anything out of that gravel and exhaust it outside the house.
Oh, put it in the basement.
So what we're trying to do is pick it up. This is coming out of the soil, so what we're trying to do is pick it up before it gets into the house. So if we go into the gravel under the basement floor and exhaust from that, then it won't get in the house.
Uh-huh.
In the same way, this is why we would go in with a sheet of polyethylene with all the joints taped and tape it to the walls and so on in the crawl space so that any that might be coming out of the soil in the crawl space can't get into the house either.
Well, now if you had a sump pump, would that be... Could you do with that if you had?
Again, you seal it.
Oh, you seal it.
You seal the top.
Oh, I thought you put the fan in it.
No. Well, you can. You can. Because that has usually hooked up to a footing tile around the outside of the building, and that's picking it up again before it gets there. Now, you may not need the fan. In many cases, all we have to do is take some plastic and duct tape and so on and seal the top of the sump. Right around the pipes and all this sort of thing. And that very often, at 5, that should take care of it if that was a problem.
Yeah. Well, it's just a new world, and I just wondered something I hadn't been involved in before.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
All right. Bye. We'll go on to somebody here on cell phone in Champaign, line 2. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. The issue is we have a 18-year-old cedar shake roof that has never had any sort of preservative treatment. So the question is, at this point, having not been exposed to preservatives before, is there any potential value in having preservatives?
If it's in reasonable condition, yes.
Okay. Are you aware of anybody's actually studied that? I mean, I know there are studies of putting on the conditioners throughout the life of the wood, but what, beginning at 18 years?
Well, the research that I am familiar with occurred at the Texas Forest Service in Lufkin, Texas.
Uh-huh.
And if you will give your name and address to the engineer out here when we get off, I will mail you a sheet that is based upon their results.
Okay. Appreciate it.
All right. Very good. And we'll see if we get that caller back on hold. And Brian Wagner will get her name and number, and we'll pass that on to Hank. And, of course, other folks who are listening, you've got questions, you can give us a call here and talk with our guest, Hank Spies, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. To our next caller, Indianola, line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a gutter question. I have a very old farmhouse, and the gutters all originally drained to diagonal corners to go into cisterns.
Yes.
And the downspouts were replaced, but they were replaced with, it looks like, a smaller size downspout than was there originally, and now the water runs over the top of the gutters onto the ground and gets in the basement. And my husband's fed up with cleaning gutters anyway, and he says he just wants to take the gutters off, and I'm not sure that's a good idea.
Well, you have to do some other things along with that. I don't have gutters on my house. What I did was on the drip line where the water that falls off the roof would hit the ground,
mm-hmm.
I dug a trench about 8 inches deep, lined that trench with plastic so the water that fell into that trench could not soak into the ground, put a perforated plastic tile in the bottom of that trench, and ran it off to some place where it would drain to daylight, then covered the tile with gravel. Now, any time water drips off the roof, it comes down, hits the gravel, goes down below, and is run off by this tile, and I haven't cleaned a gutter in 15 years.
Okay. Now, this is it's a very tall two-story house, and I mean, there's times when the water would just beat back against the built house itself because of the wind.
Okay. What you do in that case is when you dig this trench, rather than making it a vertical cut trench, you cut this trench back so it slopes to the foundation and put your plastic all the way there so that, again, any water that comes down on the outside will go hit the plastic, run to the tile, and go out. And
okay.
This keeps it out of the basement.
Okay. So this is a good alternative to gutters.
Yes.
Okay. I've got two other questions. Can I ask them?
Sure.
Okay. I've got a little bit of corner of the regular roofing shingles that have moss on them. Is that a problem?
Well, it eventually will reduce the life of the shingles in that area. This is just plain green moss.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next time you're spraying your lawn for dandelions, spray that too. It'll kill it.
Okay. And last question, and this might not be your field, but can you get termites from mulch? Or do they just get in it because they like it so much?
Mostly the latter. A termite nest, the kind of termites we have in this part of the country, the nest is anything from 8 to 12 feet underground.
Mm-hmm.
And they will come up any place there is rotting wood. Well, mulch sort of by definition is rotting wood.
Okay.
So it may attract them. It won't get them, but it can attract them.
Okay, so I don't have to worry about buying a certain kind of mulch.
No, though certainly termites are less likely to go into cypress mulch than they are pine bark or something like that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
We'll go to Downers Grove for our next person here, line number 4. Hello.
Good morning. This is Joe Prokop.
Yes.
I have a question about drainage in the... It's a four-bedroom house with a two-and-a-half bath, and we have a leak in the drain pipe upstairs that's made out of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
Every so often I hear it dripping, and we just don't know where it is.
Well,
what kind of equipment would the plumber have to have? Be able to detect whether
is this a two-story or one-story?
Two-story.
Okay, usually if you have a drip, it will start taking the paint off on the first floor underneath it.
Okay.
Now, it's perfectly possible that what you are hearing is a drip within the drainage system itself and is not a problem.
But I noticed in the basement, you know, the subfloor,
uh-huh.
that you look at the ceiling... It's
okay.
All wet.
Okay. Then in that case, yes, you're going to have to get a plumber in. It may be necessary to open up a wall to find it. Though I'm really wondering if it isn't a leak at the wax seal between the toilet and the floor.
Between the toilet and the floor.
Yeah. See where the pipe comes up into the base of the toilet. There's about a 2-pound beeswax seal there. And if something has gotten to that, it's moved or whatever, it sounds to me as though you might well have a leak at that wax seal.
But the drip comes after we use the shower, not the shower, the bathroom, the sink.
Okay. In that case, you probably will end up having to open up a wall to find the leak.
I see. All right. I just thought maybe there was some kind of a way of detecting, you know, if you put something in the water.
Well, you can try putting something in the water, even food, a bottle of food coloring, and run it down that drain and see if it turns the color on in the basement. But I have a feeling that it's not going to be that easy to find.
I see.
I wish there was a better way, but if there isn't peeling paint, then...
No, we don't have any peeling paint.
Okay, then it'd be very difficult to find without opening up the wall so you can actually see it.
I see. Well, thanks very much.
Okay.
We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's with us every month on a Monday in the 10 o'clock hour to talk about home maintenance. So if you have some kind of problem, you need a little bit of advice, you can call us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Champaign, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Told I'm going to have a new roof on our house. It has two on there now, and that's asphalt, and this last one is 28 years old.
You're more fortunate than most.
Pardon me?
You're more fortunate than most.
Yes, we have been. And we wonder, now, does everything have to be stripped off down to the bare wood to put a new one on, or what?
We would recommend that. We never recommend a third layer.
Okay. Why is that? The weight?
Both weight and heat buildup.
Oh, that's interesting.
The thicker it is, the more heat is retained in the shingle, which shortens the life of the shingle.
Mm.
The building codes will allow three layers, but we never recommend them.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is a new thing on the market, they tell me. It's some kind of rubber thing. Would you recommend that over the shingles?
That is only for use on flat or very low slope roofs.
Oh, I see.
I certainly would not recommend it over shingles for an ordinary pitch roof.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Next caller is Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi, I'm calling from Urbana, and this is a question about a bathtub. The drain that we have that you click to make the water stay in the tub or the tub, it doesn't stay latched up, and I'm wondering if that's something that I could fix.
If you can get to the back of it, the question is there an access panel to the plumbing on the other side of the end of the tub?
There's a cutout hole on the other side of the wall.
Yeah, okay, that's what I'm looking for.
Okay.
So yeah,
I can do that at home?
Probably. Look and see. It's a matter of tightening the packing nut on that, and so it should stay.
Okay, wonderful.
But if you can take that panel off and get to it, it may be one of those things that takes a left-handed midget to get in there.
Okay.
But beyond that, yes, it should be possible.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for your help.
All right. Very good. We'll go on here. Champaign is next. Line three. Hello.
Hi. Good morning. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about softwood floors? I have a 30-year-old, oh, no, excuse me, a house built in the 30s, and the floors are softwood, but there's no underlayment beneath the flooring, and I'm wondering if that was common or if
that not real unusual.
Not real unusual.
No.
Okay. And does it care of that kind of flooring any different than care for a floor that has an underlayment?
No.
Okay.
It's just a matter of getting a finish on the wood.
Okay. And I had one other question about a ratio of venting in the attic.
Okay.
And how much venting you need for an attic.
Okay, is there a vapor barrier in the ceiling? Since it was built in the 30s, I would say the answer, unless one has been added, the answer is no. So therefore, you should have about 1 square foot of net-free area for every 150 square feet of ceiling. And all attic vents and soffit vents and so on have a number from the manufacturer as to how many square inches of net-free area they have. And so you need about 1 square foot for every 100 square feet of the of attic.
Very good. Thanks very much.
Okay.
All right. And we certainly have time for a couple of callers. If somebody wants to get on phone real quick and dial us up, we can get him in. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Going back to the lady with the radon question, you were talking about the fact that it's sometimes now difficult to find somebody who will test. I seem to recall that there was at one time a test kit that you could buy.
Yes.
You could put it in the place you were concerned about. Then after a specific period of time, you send it off. They test it. They send it back to you.
That's correct. I haven't seen one of those in the stores in quite some time. Certainly that is a possibility. The state requirement has to do with people who do it commercially.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And I think they also have to license the lab that analyzes the thing that you send back in and so on. And they made the whole process so onerous that nearly all the home inspectors that I know of won't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. So it may still be possible for you to do that yourself if you can find the home test to do it.
Right.
Yeah. Then I guess there's also a question about, well, where should you do the test? And
the lowest habitable room in the house.
Okay. So that means that, so then I guess in my mind, there would be this question of, well, maybe you get one reading in the basement, you get one reading on the first floor, and if you're not going to be living in the basement, then...
If you're not using the basement, then that doesn't pertain. I would say the lowest regularly used room in the house is where we would always test.
Well, we got a couple of other people here. I think we'll get him in the time that's left. Urbana, next, line one. Hello.
Hi. I have a heating and cooling question. We have an old house that was built in 1911.
Okay.
And it has a coal burner that was converted to gas with the old gravity feed octopus-looking like furnace.
Right.
And there are no vents to the upstairs besides one in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some heating and cooling guys look at it, and they differ in opinion on how to get heat to the upstairs. And I was kind of wondering what you thought of this.
Well,
they both agree that it's easier to soffit through the first floor to get it to the upstairs.
Right.
But some are saying to run all the way through to the attic and then come down into the rooms, and some are saying just go up to the floor.
It all depends on where they can get to with the ductwork up into the floor. Generally speaking, heat should be put in near the outside wall, and that is usually difficult to do when you're bringing ductwork up through the floor. It is very common to use a spider system where basically you bring one large duct up through a closet someplace where you have a closet on the first and second floor, one over the other, take it into the attic and put out insulated ducts and bring it into the middle of the room. This is not the ideal place to bring heat in, but in an old house, it's usually the most practical place to bring it in.
Okay.
Now, the other thing is, yes, you can go into the floor if you can get to every room that way. And I think that's the real problem is there a way of getting heat into every room by coming up through the floor? And in most old houses, the answer is no. I can't, without seeing your house, I can't say that there is or isn't. But generally speaking, heat in the ceiling is acceptable as long as you are over a heated space. Otherwise, heat in the ceiling when you're on a crawl space or slab or something like that is not a particularly desirable thing because the floor gets too cold.
Okay. And one other thing, putting AC in the same way.
Yes.
Some differ and say you're better off with a window unit in the upper floor and just getting cold to the bottom, and others are saying that it would work if you had additional intakes through the attic space as well.
Well, I don't know that you even need additional intakes. If you leave the bedroom doors open so that the air can cascade down the stairs, you can get by with one intake on the first floor. But I would put in the central air. I would not put in window units.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. One more here, and that would be Champagne Line 2. Hello.
Hello. Although lead-based paint, I believe, was banned in 1978, is it still a major problem in the housing stock in the Champaign-Urbana area?
Well, it all depends on what you're considering to be a major problem and where you're getting into it. It's only a problem if you are actually moving it, trying to sand it, whatever. Most of the lead-based paint was used on trim and on exteriors. Not very much of it was used on interior walls. So if you're going to do some major modification to wood trim around windows or strip paint on the outside, then yes, it can be.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks. And we're just sort of about the point we've got to finish here. I guess maybe we have a minute or so left. Any last sort of thing you'd like to leave with folks?
Well, this is a good time to check the filter on your air conditioner. We're about halfway through the cooling season, and the system works much better if the filter is clean. And likewise, you want to look at the outside unit to be sure that grass hasn't blown into it, cottonwood fuzz, lint from a dryer vent or something like that hasn't gotten into the outside unit. Get that all cleaned up to make sure that you're getting the best efficiency you can out of the air conditioner.
Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate the time. Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is here on this program every month, always on a Monday, to do these programs on home maintenance.